heavily trafficked retail. Single-family tract homes may be just as challenging. Additional retail may be viable if the developer can lure high-quality anchor tenants to the location, but they may already be operating in other nearby centers. By far in this example, either multi-unit housing or office space are the most viable options. Why? Because of the nearby employment base, the absence of apartments in the area, the proximity to retail, and the lack of office rentals. The developer in this instance who builds offices or apartments will have the best chance of success and will appear to have the Midas touch. There's no magic, just common sense. How do you know you're relying on your common sense? It's easy. If everyone you talk with is having difficulty seeing your vision for a property, it can be either one of two things: a revolutionary idea that will prove everyone wrong, or a bad idea that everyone recognizes as a bad idea except you. In 99% of the cases, the latter proves to be true. Remember, if you have to hard sell your vision for a property to everyone you share it with, it is likely your project, when completed, will be a hard sell too, and that will cost you money. Myth number 5, you need a great deal of confidence. Not true. People underestimate themselves all the time. They listen to that little voice of self-doubt that whispers and sometimes shouts in their brain, telling them all the reasons why they can't do something, why they shouldn't even try. I believe there are two voices, the voice of reason and the voice of self-doubt. The voice of reason is common sense. The voice of self-doubt is your past leading your future. I made a conscious decision not to let my past dictate my future. I grew up in an average middle-class home. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, in my estimation, there's everything right with that. I worked for what I got. I learned solid values. A good deal of that came from my parents. My father was not particularly entrepreneurial until later in his career. Hard-working, yes, but not entrepreneurial. He worked for the same company for most of his career and earned a stable living that supported our middle-class lifestyle. It was a good life for me, my brother, and two sisters. When I got out of college, I followed in my dad's footsteps and got a job. But while in that job, I began to meet people, people who showed me their entrepreneurial ways. They became my mentors, and from them I became entrepreneurial. Then I combined the innate values I received from my parents and my own newfound entrepreneurial spirit, and I became whole. Nothing in my upbringing would have prepared me for what I'm doing now. And yet everything did. I believe it is up to each of us to let go of the memories and the scars of unsupported fathers, ultra-critical mothers, ridiculing friends and teachers who labeled us from the first day of school. Everybody has had negative influences in their lives, and every one of us will have lots more. Look at Hollywood. What's a celebrity profile on E without the struggles, without the strife? Everyone must rise from challenging situations. That's what successful people do. They decide to get beyond their past, whatever it may be. I've chosen to accept my past, learn from it, copy what was good, and realize the bad stuff only makes me stronger. Real estate investing is a business where you will need to draw on your strength. My advice is not only to look for strength in all that is good in your life, but also to use the hard times for what they are, character-building experiences. And contrary to what most people think, we can never have enough character. That's my soapbox on confidence and character. The rest of this book is dedicated to building your property investment business. Myth number 6. You want to do it, but you don't really have the time. This really comes down to choices and priorities. There is always time to do the things we need to do, like go to work every day, mow the lawn, feed the dog. Often there isn't time to do the things we really want to do. Learn to speak a second language, build a bookcase, or volunteer in the community. There is a difference between need and want. We'll often do what we need and put off what we want. Unfortunately, our wants are what truly enrich our lives. the investment real estate business is something you should want to do and may even need to do. It's work. To be truly successful, especially in the beginning, you will be involved in day-to-day activities of finding and evaluating property, negotiating deals, overseeing contract repair work, possibly even managing the property once it's yours. I can honestly say, I find the business rewarding, fun, and because of that, it is profitable. I fell victim to the myth of not having enough time myself, and I take full blame. Robert Kiyosaki asked me to write this book several years ago. Finally, I embraced the idea and actually started wanting to get it done. But wanting was not enough. What got me going was a do-it-or-else deadline. That got my attention and made me realize I needed to get disciplined and write the book. That's what got the book done. If you don't have the time to begin your real estate investment business, maybe in your mind, you don't really need to do it. Maybe you simply want to do it, and want alone may not be enough to get you started. After all, if you work during the week at another job, you will have to search for and evaluate property on the weekends. You'll need to make phone calls when you can during the week or in the evenings. There's always a way to make your dreams come true, as long as they are truly your dreams. Myth number 7. You have to know somebody to get going in this business. While knowing a few key people, such as a real estate agent, an attorney, or a banker, may save you some time, you don't need to know anyone even remotely connected with investment real estate to get started. In this book, you'll discover the key people you need to have on your team, and you'll find that the goals you set for yourself will actually define the team. People you know today may or may not be the ideal people for your team once you determine what you want to gain from your real estate investment business. You just get started and you'll be surprised how many people you'll get to know and how much they'll teach you. You'll have friends in the business before you know it. Here's what I mean. We were doing a deal in Portland, Oregon. I live and work in Arizona. I hadn't been to Portland in over 10 years. Anyone I had once known there was long since gone. Neither I nor anyone else in my company knew a soul in Portland. What we did know was that the city was situated on two rivers and that unemployment was high. The latter meant that the people who owned property were probably not doing so well. And to me, that spelled buying opportunity. We had one big problem. We knew about the city, but we didn't know a single person in the city. We figured the market conditions were at least worth a plane trip and a few days in Portland. Before our trip, we made our minds up to find our team, at least the start of it. So we went on the internet and looked up property managers, city officials, brokers, and so on in preparation for our trip. We were not about to travel that far and not meet with anyone who could educate us about the market. As a result, we had 10 or 12 meetings over a period of 2 days. It cost us a few lunches and dinners, but we had the beginnings of our team. Myth number 8. You have to be a seasoned negotiator and business person. Again, this is just not true. Experience in business may make that first walk into an investor's office more comfortable, but that's all it will do. Your true power and confidence won't come from your past experience. Instead, it will come from the solid deal you assemble that is a win-win for everyone involved. This book will show you how to find and evaluate property with the ultimate goal of establishing a realistic purchase price that maximizes your monthly income and appreciates the asset. Find a deal like that, and everyone will want a piece of the action. Over the years, I've walked away from a lot of deals, and negotiation had nothing to do with it. One of those deals was a 205-unit building in Glendale, Arizona. About a year ago, the listing price was $7.9 million, and the broker told me there were other offers, the highest one being $7.2 million. We did our homework on the property, and by my estimation, $7.2 million was fair based on the operations of the property. The seller declined every offer and pulled the listing. 6 months later, the seller relisted the building for $8.1 million. If I had still been interested in the property, I would have made an offer based on operations. It would have been the same $7.2 million offer I made before. The seller would probably kick me out along with everyone else who made him an offer based on operations. Are you surprised to learn that he still owns the building today? With the method in this book, you'll find out that the listing price is meaningless. There is no point negotiating based on this number, and actually doing so is a recipe for disaster. That's because in most cases, the listing price is the seller's opinion of what the property is worth. It is not founded on the actual operations of the property. What most people consider negotiation meetings are for me more accurately described as presentation meetings. That's when I present the numbers, and they are pretty much take-it-or-leave-it deals. When I get kicked out, and in truth, usually it is a mutual parting of the ways, it's because the numbers don't work. Walking away is a good thing. Myth number 9. You have to know a lot about real estate. This myth holds people back every single day. They feel they have to already be experts in a field in order to be successful, whether it is real estate or stock investing or dry cleaning. First of all, success is a journey. It's not a destination. And all successful people start at the same place. One day they wake up, they throw their legs over the side of the bed, and they yawn, and they begin. Only by beginning and by continuing day after day do we ever become experts. We gain expertise through experience. By reading this book, you'll get a solid framework from which to begin. And you'll gain enough knowledge to sound really smart at cocktail parties and backyard barbecues, but more importantly, you'll learn tons more from your first deal. And more still from your second and third, and even more from your fourth. I learned something new with every venture. Some of the buildings we recently bought in Portland were built on an old wooden pier constructed in the 1930s. Who would have guessed when I embarked in this business I would have to learn anything about the structural integrity of 70-year-old piers? Not me, but I needed to find out everything about the condition of that pier before we went forward and purchased the property. I live in the desert, so you can imagine how foreign it was for me to hire divers and a boat and structural engineers to do the inspections. It was a real learning experience. I'm always encountering something new. That's part of what keeps it all interesting. The only way you'll know a lot about real estate is to begin in real estate. Once you do that, you'll meet people, learn your market, see the patterns, and understand the trends. You'll encounter your own 70-year-old wooden piers, but that will keep it fun. And before you know it, you'll be wowing people at cocktail parties and barbecues with experiences you've lived rather than just read about. Myth number 10, you can't be afraid of failing. Show me an entrepreneur who says he or she isn't afraid of failing, and I'll show you a liar. A bold statement, absolutely, but a true one. Everyone is afraid of failing. The difference is that some of us let that fear of failure hold us back. Sometimes fear stops us from beginning altogether, and that's unfortunate. If that's the case, make the decision now to just begin putting one foot in front of the other, making one phone call at a time, visiting one property, and then another. It's not hard, but it can seem so if we focus on the end result instead of the tiny and very doable steps in between. Sometimes fear of failure occurs when it comes time to pull the trigger on a property. I call it analysis paralysis, and people fall into it all the time. They overanalyze an opportunity and are never quite able to sign on the dotted line. This book will prove especially helpful to people with this sort of fear because it will show you exactly what you need to know to analyze an investment property. When the numbers add up, no further analysis is necessary. Frozen in fear will be a thing of the past. Another way fear of failure presents itself is through regret. In other words, we've pulled the trigger, but then when difficulties occur and they will occur, they always do, we regret the decision and waste energy by asking, why did we do this? Instead of, what can we do to get past the hurdle? This form of fear can turn an otherwise great opportunity into a bad investment. In my life, I don't regret decisions. I just consider the place where I'm at as the starting line and go for the gold every day. I admit when I was just starting out, I had an acute fear of failing. The difference is I knew that if I did nothing and remained frozen in fear, I would fail. I felt that I had a better chance of success by just going forward one step at a time to make some opportunities pay off. That's the thing about fear of failure. If you don't use it to your advantage as a motivator, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Myth number 11, you have to know the tricks of the trade. There are no tricks of the trade in the purest sense of the term, but there are secrets to success in life. And as long as you know those, you'll be successful at anything. First, you have to set goals. Goals will be the foundation of the roadmap for your success. They will also tell you when you've arrived, so you can pat yourself on the back. Everyone needs that reinforcement. Not coincidentally, the next chapter is all about goal setting. Second, you have to persevere. Quitting when things get tough doesn't produce winners. In 15 years, I could have quit 100 times. I've had plenty of tough problems. Financing that falls through, employee problems, and downright frightening resident issues. But successful people work through difficulties and they come out on the other side stronger, more confident, and better prepared for the next challenge. And trust me, there will be more challenges. Finally, you have to understand the process. That's what this book will do. It will take you from beginning to end and every step in between, from setting goals to setting up your team, to finding property, to evaluating it, to determining a purchase price, to managing it. I'll let you in on 15 years worth of experience. I hope this book will become your handbook for success. Chapter 1, Action Steps. Understand the myths in this chapter. Ask yourself if there are any others. Identify the ones you believe to be true. Determine which myths have been responsible for hindering your success. Make the commitment to abandon these unproductive myths. And make the commitment to learn techniques and preparedness so magical things can happen. Blair Singer, Rich Dad Advisor on Sales and Teams. Personal background and entrepreneur profile. Name, Blair Singer. Date of birth, February 20th, 1953. Place of birth, Canton, Ohio. Traditional education, The Ohio State University, Columbus, Ohio. Degree, Bachelor of Arts. Major, Political Science. Professional education, Professional Selling System, Burroughs Corporation. Grade point averages, high school 3.3, college 3.0. Value of traditional education relative to becoming an entrepreneur. Traditional education was actually a huge handicap as I started into business completely risk averse and terrified I'd screw up. Subject I liked most in school. Political science in college, and the study of how to get people to do things they would not normally do. How to make change on a global scale. I also like being a manager for the OSU football team and traveling the country learning the lessons of leadership and team. Subject I hated most in school. Organic chemistry and genetics. I started school in pre-med. First entrepreneurial project. Cutting grass and shoveling snow in Ohio. I owned two city blocks, which I thought was a big deal at the time. Later, I was part of an ill-fated surf and sail shop in Waikiki, in which we made no money, had a lot of fun, and got introduced to personal development, which set the direction for the rest of my life. The key entrepreneurial skill I was not taught in school, how to make mistakes and learn how to learn from them instead of being embarrassed and avoiding them altogether. I was also not taught how to be accountable and responsible for myself. It took moving halfway around the world and being totally on my own to finally get it. Why and when I became an entrepreneur and my first major venture. My first real entrepreneurial endeavor was something that seemed like a good idea at the time. It was in 1981. I was a top sales rep for the Burroughs Corporation at the time and bored as you know what. Because I was a competitive sailboat racer and because I was new to Hawaii and had just gone through a painful divorce, I was looking for a way to become part of something bigger. A friend of mine convinced me to invest $10,000 into a business he had just taken over. It was a surf shop and Prindle catamaran dealership. The one thing we both could do well was sell. What we could not do was run a business. When it came to inventory, purchasing, retailing, accounting, and cash management, we were like a couple of children. However, it was some of the best fun of my life. I would never take it back. The friends I made were all crazy entrepreneurs, and I found out in a short period of time that I had a ton to learn. Ever since I had been a little kid, I loved to learn new stuff, and this was a world with endless possibilities and certainly endless learning opportunities. I had always revolted against people telling me things I could not do, parents, teachers in school, employers. As an entrepreneur, the freedom was instantly infectious. I also learned that freedom would sometimes come at great costs, and I also learned it was always worth it. Best lesson from first business. The best lessons I learned from my first business were how little I knew about business. I had always figured that there was no problem in business that more sales couldn't solve. Boy, was I wrong. I learned that little omissions or small inadequacies become super big when you add more sales to them. Bad accounting, questionable partners, no cash flow management, all set us up for lots of drama and countless fire drills. It was not until my second major entrepreneurial endeavor that I really got the lessons. In the first case, I was convinced that most of our problems were my partner's fault. I had yet to truly learn my lesson about being 100% responsible for my actions in business and in my life. Years later, in Los Angeles, I took over a failing air freight trucking operation with hopes of becoming a multimillionaire instantly. Another rude awakening. It was there that I learned powerful secrets of great organizations. From the brink of numerous disasters in that business, it was our code of honor, or internal rules, that pulled us through time and time again. I learned how to take ordinary, sometimes uneducated and even skeptical people and turn them into a championship team. I learned that success was a function of business skills, like the ability to sell, recruit, and run a team, teach others how to sell, accountability to numbers, and to a code of honor. It also required a ton of personal development training for myself and my team. I realized that the biggest problem with my business in Hawaii and my business in LA was me. I realized that the more I worked on getting my head right, the more the business flowed. It was all my well-intended conditioning from growing up on a farm in Ohio, going to school, being good, and not making mistakes, not trusting anybody that had put the brakes on my success. Best lesson? I learned that I really love to lead, teach, and inspire teams. What I learned about myself from my Kolbe Index. Please see companion file number 12. The biggest lesson from my Kolbe is that there are really no weaknesses, just a series of specific strengths. I had always beat myself up for not planning well. But from the Kolbe, I discovered that it was an apparent weakness that was covering my ability to be incredibly creative under pressure and at a moment's notice. Planning actually squashed my creativity. My role in the BI triangle. My role in the BI triangle is clearly communication. Aligning teams, establishing and communicating mission and purpose, and of course, sales, and marketing. Skills that are essential for entrepreneurs, but not taught in schools. 1. I agree that the willingness to make mistakes is by far the most important skill of all. Learning to embrace them as learning experiences rather than indictments, to eliminate the shame, the denial, and the justification that goes with them. Most of those responses, by the way, are actually taught in school as a matter of survival. Learning how to embrace mistakes and the lessons they hold is as critical as learning not to fear making them in the first place. Once you make a mistake, you end up having to deal with it one way or another. However, the fear of making one has at times paralyzed me from making any decision at all. That fear causes stress, confusion, worry, self-doubt, and a host of other ailments that simply rob you of your dreams. 2. The most important business skill by far is the ability to sell. Sales equals income. From that ability comes the ability to generate income, allocate resources, recruit great partners and team players, negotiate, and the ability to get others to buy into your goals and dreams. There are many who consider sales to be a dirty word, something they would choose to avoid. Why? Probably because their fear of rejection or embarrassment. I have never seen a successful entrepreneur that could not sell. It is the lifeblood of any business, but it is also key to getting anything you want from life. I have worked with hundreds of thousands of individuals over the last 25 years, and thousands of businesses, and any time I see a person or business with a cash flow problem, it is because that person, or someone key in that business, doesn't know how to sell, doesn't like to sell, or doesn't think it's important. Every person on a business team must sell. 3. The second most important skill is the ability to recruit and build a championship team. Unless you played sports in school, you never learned team. Trying to cooperate in school was considered cheating. Yet in business, cooperation is essential. We are trained to work hard and do things on our own. I was actually taught that asking for help is a sign of weakness. It was no wonder that I had such a rough road early in my business career. Simply learning how to establish and implement a simple code of honor or a set of team rules will radically improve any group of individuals working toward a common set of goals. 4. As an entrepreneur, I learned that you have to learn how to teach. Why? Because the skills of business are not well taught in school. Therefore, you have to teach your teams how to sell, how to cooperate, how to succeed. I consider this to be one of the most underplayed skills in business. Those leaders who are great teachers build incredible teams and organizations. 5. I would say that learning how to win the war between your ears is critical in this day and age. Learning how to manage your own emotions, psychology, and personal development is not an option. It's mandatory. As things get more complex, emotions tend to rise and intelligence can drop. Continually working on myself and on my emotional responses, my doubts and my fears, has paid me back millions of times over. My most important lesson for entrepreneurs: bad partnerships have led to finding great partners and powerful lessons. It is true that you cannot do a good deal with a bad partner, but I know that I have had a series of dubious partners who have led me to the greatest partnerships and friends of my life. My first partner in the surf shop was a hustler, but it was through him that I got started in the world of personal development. Once in that world, I partnered with my teacher and mentor, who was brilliant and changed my life, but was a financial disaster. But through him, Robert, Kim, and I became true friends and partners. In my life, partners have always been there to show me the next big lesson I needed to learn. Even in the trucking business, the shady dealings of my partners taught me the true meaning of accountability and taking 100% ownership. My ex-partner in our global sales franchise taught me the importance of having alignment of values and how powerful it can be when an organization is lined up with them, as well as how destructive it can be when it's not. He got me clear on my own values and direction and cured me of my lack of confidence in myself. How I learned to raise capital. I first learned to raise capital under major duress when my trucking company was upside down $750,000due to the loss of a lot of money to a factoring company. We had no money for payroll for our 30-plus staff or operating expenses. I had to literally beg the bank to cover our payroll for a few weeks until I could go to all my customers and beg them to pay us in advance for services we had not even rendered yet, and beg suppliers to keep working with us until I could pay them. At the time, it didn't seem like raising capital. It seemed more like lots of passionate selling. That was a tough 9-month period, but it taught me how to ask for money. It was not until very recently that I actually took the time to learn to raise capital in an organized, legitimate way to fund a business and real estate project. How I learned to overcome fear and failure. I don't know if I ever fully learned how to overcome fear. I still have fear, and I certainly still fail from time to time. I guess I have learned how to manage it. I have learned to change my response from fight or flight to inquisitiveness and curiosity. I continually seek counseling, coaching, and mentorship in the areas that scare me the most. Whenever there is something that I am afraid of, I've found that I have this built-in response that forces me to want to do it anyway, simply conquer the fear. I have helped thousands of people make billions of dollars over the years. I have done well for myself, too. But actually raising capital from investors for my own deal was something I had never done until recently. I was afraid that if I failed in my endeavor, I would take others down with me. Because of past business experiences, it was a legitimate fear. Yet I was determined to overcome that fear and, under the amazing mentorship of Ken McElroy and other Rich Dad advisors, I successfully did it. The whole exercise was as much about overcoming my fear and learning something I had always wanted to learn as it was about doing the deal itself. I also learned that when failure or mistakes do happen, assemble your team or advisors to help you work through it rather than suffering alone and trying to figure your way out of it by yourself. So much easier and so much more successful. Big improvement for a guy who didn't trust anybody and had to prove to the world I could do life on my own. My personal strength. My strength is definitely my energy and my endurance. I believe that highest energy wins, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. I was a distance runner in high school, and I built an inner thought that I can outlast just about anyone. For the right reasons, of course. It has kept me in the fight longer than most and allowed me to learn the most. I do not give up easy, am very disciplined about some things, and very willing to be a student or even an apprentice in the areas I want to grow in. My personal weakness. My personal weakness is still my concern about what others think about me. It has held me back more than once. As I have learned to accept myself with all the good, the bad, and the ugly, my ability to be real and not worry about what others think fades away. The entrepreneurial skills I teach best. Team building and communication. The entrepreneurial lesson I teach. Sales equals income. Sales equals income. By Blair Singer. It's not unusual for people to remember their firsts, and I'm no exception. Like most people, I've had a lot of firsts. Here's one that taught me a lot of things. My first sales presentation. It was a bitter cold February morning in the rural farmlands of northeastern Ohio. I remember the details because my mom had bundled me up in a blue snowsuit that made me look like the Michelin tire guy, and I was so stuffed that I could only waddle. It was around my 5th birthday, and I was bumping along the dirt roads, sitting next to my grandfather in his cattle truck. The cold didn't matter to me because there was a lot on the line. In the back of the truck was Sam. Sam was my lamb that my grandfather had loaned to me about a year earlier. He got the lamb as one part of the many livestock deals and trades that were part of how he made his living. It was part of a lesson he was determined to teach me very early. The deal was this. He loaned me Sam, and I had to take care of him and beef him up for the purposes of selling him. Why? Because for my last birthday, I wanted an electric train set. But my parents, hard-working dairy farmers at the time, said they could not afford it. My grandfather, however, told me that if I wanted the train, I would have to earn it. That's how I learned that if I wanted to buy something, I first had to sell something. So as we pulled into the parking lot at the livestock auction, I was still practicing the sales presentation that I was going to give. They unloaded Sam, and we walked inside to the auction arena. There were probably 75 to 100 farmers there, mostly Amish, waiting to either watch their stock get sold or buy stock they needed for their herds. My grandfather was well known in the community, and I had been there with him many times. But this time, it was different. Almost immediately, there was a pause in the furious auctioning and bidding. A big handler came over, lifted me over the brass railing, and hoisted me way up onto the auctioneer's podium. The whole place went silent. Everyone was looking at me. Sam was led into the ring, and, with a huge smile, the auctioneer pushed the big microphone over to me and nodded his head. I saw my grandfather sitting there, grinning from ear to ear. It was showtime. All these years later, I thank my grandfather for his wisdom to teach me so much with so little effort. At age 5, he gave me a gift that ensured I would always be able to make money, anytime, any place, and in any economy. He taught me that sales was the ticket to having whatever I wanted. He taught me the value of exchange, that I had to somehow add value to other people's lives or businesses, and that if I learned how to ask for it, I could always make money. He taught me the freedom of having my own money and the idea that my lifestyle could determine my income, not the other way around. That is why when I met Robert and Kim, we became such great friends. We shared the same philosophy. Let your lifestyle and your dreams determine your income, not your income determining your lifestyle. That's only possible, however, if you know how to sell. Robert had gone to work for Xerox after his tour in Vietnam because his rich dad told him that sales was the number one skill a person had to master to be a successful entrepreneur. I went to work for the Burroughs Corporation for the same reason. At the time, those companies were world-renowned for having the best sales training programs in the world. In the 30 years that I have worked with entrepreneurs, big and small businesses, and aspiring individuals, any time I have seen cash flow struggles, it is because that person, or that business, or certain people in the business, either don't like to sell, don't think it's important to sell, think their products will sell themselves crazy, or think they already know how to sell when they don't. You know the stats. 95% of businesses fail in the first 3 years. Not because they do not have great products or services, or because the business owners don't work hard. They work their you-know-whats off. Businesses fail because the owners, manager, or sales teams cannot sell. They fail because they run out of money and can't raise capital. Same sales problem. Or they work alone and cannot recruit a team. Same problem. By the way, I still remember part of my well-rehearsed presentation that day at the auction. This is Sam. He is my lamb. I got him at an early age and fed him with a bottle. I am using the money I make from selling Sam to buy an electric train. I remember they all chuckled. I didn't know if that was good or bad. All I know is that, as usual, the bidding was fast and furious. I am sure the audience of buyers was amused and simply trying to get this one over with so they could get on with their other business. I actually think I got a sympathy vote that day. My grandfather collected the money. I don't know how much I made at the end of the day, but I do know that on my fifth birthday, I had a brand new HO gauge electric train set. More importantly, I was now in control of the rest of my life. So the lesson here is clear. You must know how to sell, because sales equals income. It is what separates the rich entrepreneurs from struggling and poor ones. So why is it so elusive for so many? In some of my programs that I conduct around the world, I have my audiences do a free word association on the word salesman. I hear people shout out words like pushy, slimy, no integrity, used cars, annoying, pest, manipulator, and many others. For many, the word sales is a dirty word. It brings up negative images and disdain. And the easiest way to avoid all of that is to convince yourself that you are not a selling type of person and don't sell. But then you're broke. If you are going to be a rich entrepreneur, learn to master the three parts of sales. This is true whether you are selling person to person, on social media, via digital marketing, or business to business. First part of sales. The first part is the obvious. Learn how to find out what people want and give it to them. That's it. Really simple. How do you do that? Here are the first steps. Find people with money and a need. Don't waste your time with those who cannot exchange with you. In social media, this is critical. Identifying a very specific niche and catering to their needs is far better than a shotgun approach. Approach and contact them. Learn the art of building rapport. Ask questions. Be interested. Go into their world first. Identify their problems and challenges, both technical and emotional. Learn to be able to present your solutions based upon what they tell you. Give the benefits of your solutions. Take the time to explain the value of your solutions based upon their problems. This is the most important part. If the person objects to price, it is because you have not articulated enough value. Turn their objections, a no into a yes, through lots of questions and digging out the truth. Make a compelling offer and close the deal by learning how to ask. Because if you don't ask, the answer is already no. Return to get great testimonials. These are clearly great for marketing, but also force you to make sure that you delivered on the promise you made during the sale. We could spend a long time on any one of these steps, but in the brief time I have with you here, just know that with lots of practice, you will master these pieces. Much of this is covered in my Rich Dad Advisor Series book, Sales Dog. You don't have to be an attack dog to explode your income. Toughest sale of all. The second part of sales is the toughest sale of all. It is the part that truly draws the line between rich or poor as an entrepreneur. The toughest sale of all is you. That's right, you selling to yourself. Getting yourself to do what you know you should do, but for one reason or another you don't. Making sales calls, eliminating procrastination, stopping the incessive self-abuse that goes with being overly critical of yourself. I call that argument going on in your head your little voice. You know the one I'm talking about? That one that just said, "What little voice?" That's the one. The second part of mastering sales is learning to master that little voice so it stops shooting you in the foot and sabotaging your best laid plans. I remember in my first real business, I was struggling. I think it was Robert back in 1982 who suggested I go to a personal development program. It was my first. Somewhere in the middle of that program, I realized that the one thing in common with all the successes and failures in my life, both in business and in relationships, I had just gone through a very painful one-year marriage and divorce, was me. At that time in my life, that was a massive revelation. All I know is that for the first several months after that program, my sales shot through the roof. I was on fire. I went from almost getting fired to becoming number one in sales within the next 18 months. I stopped arguing with myself. I stopped hiding at the Flamingo Cafe drinking coffee instead of making sales calls. I stopped quitting early when I had made my quota of sales calls. I stopped talking myself out of doing what needed to be done. My confidence level was sky high. My close ratios were amazing. Sales is an emotional contact sport. Every day is a personal development program in which you get a chance to get better as a person. The more you train yourself to deal with the little voice, the more you will win. Most important, I had learned to master the number one little voice issue that stops sales dead in their tracks. It's the one issue that sends dreams to the grave with their creators. It is what buries genius, snuffs out leadership, and creates lifelong struggle and misery. You want to know what it is? It's your concern about what other people think or might think about you. That's it. Robert and I, and about a dozen others, used to lock ourselves in a room every Thursday night for months, practicing our presentations, practicing handling the most nightmarish objections we could dream up. Why? In order to desensitize that killer little voice that undermines your plans and goals. So here is a list of little voice issues that could be blocking your income and shutting down sales. Lack of discipline. As my coach Mac Newton defines it, doing what you are supposed to be doing when you are supposed to be doing it, whether you like it or not. Low self-confidence. When two people come together in a selling situation, the person with the highest energy wins. Fear of humiliation, looking stupid, rejection, you name it. Procrastination. Being not blank enough, you fill in the blank. Trying to be somebody you are not. And while we're on that subject, there are some who would tell you that you have to be like someone else in order to succeed. In my opinion, after working with hundreds of thousands of people, not only does this not work and hurt your income, it will crush your spirit. In Sales Dogs, you will discover your selling genius because there are at least five different sales personalities. You do not have to be the pit bull attack dog. Perhaps you are the charming and always looking good poodle, the filled with irrefutable evidence chihuahua, the do anything for you retriever who operates by the law of reciprocity, or even the look you in the eye super connected basset hound. The key is to be your authentic self and play to your strengths. The numbers. The third part of mastering sales is also the key to mastering any business. It's called accountability. I have been asked my opinion of the most powerful sales motivation tool. I usually say it was the Monday morning sales meeting, where everyone would have to put their numbers up on the board and be accountable. Number of calls, number of appointments, proposals, closes, etc. Numbers do not improve unless you measure them. You have to keep track of and be accountable to your activities. If you are only focusing on the sales at the end, you are too late. Selling is a process, and you have to master each step of the process before you can master the whole process. That is why you measure each step so you know how and where to improve. Numbers do not lie, and they tell a story of behaviors and attitudes and efforts. The absence of numbers also tells a story. To lose weight, you have to get on the scale. To improve your financial health, you have to pull a financial statement. I find that companies leave millions of dollars sitting on the table because they do not use numbers to train, coach, or improve the way they could. A couple of our trainers worked with a small massage clinic not too far away from my home in Phoenix. They simply worked on one number in their selling cycle, and within 6 weeks, they had improved annual sales from $300,000 to over $700,000. Originally, that business owner had said he wanted more leads. They did not need more leads. They simply needed better conversion of the leads they had. It's clear you have a dream, or you wouldn't be listening to this book. But if you can't sell that dream to others, they will not support you. You may sell products and services, but if you're going to be a rich entrepreneur, you need to sell more than that. When I had my little trucking company at LAX in the 1980s, we went upside down over $750,000 in the first 9 months. I had 30-plus people on staff and lots of demanding customers. I begged the bank to cover our payrolls when I had no money, pleaded with customers to pay us in advance for services we had not yet rendered, sweet-talked our suppliers and carriers to continue to work with us, even though I could not pay them. It saved our business at the time. It was my first experience raising capital. Yet it terrified me to think that I might not be able to pay it all back. Many years later, it came time for me to expand and build my current business, my dream. But I knew that the only way it would happen was for me to raise capital. The memory of those difficult times in the trucking business still haunted me. But I knew it was a little voice issue. With great mentorship and lots of little voice coaching, I slowly learned each step of the process of raising capital from the best in the business. It seemed that once I got my LV, that's little voice, out of the way and healed my past, money started coming in until our first private placement offering was fully subscribed. Bill Gates sells shares in Microsoft. We buy them. Big difference in wealth and income. Whether it is capital, resources, support, or even love, you must be able to successfully ask for what you want and be willing to exchange something in the present or the future to make that happen. At the end of the day, you are asking people to trust you. The question is, are you good for it? Be awesome. About Blair Singer. For nearly three decades, Blair Singer has empowered people around the world to go beyond their ordinary selves and reach peak performance, rightfully earning him a worldwide reputation as an expert in sales, business, and personal growth. He is a facilitator of personal and organizational change, a trainer, and a dynamic public speaker. Blair's approach is one of high energy, intense and precise personal development, and inspiration. His unique ability to get entire groups of people and organizations to shake up the status quo, change behaviors quickly, and achieve peak performance levels in a very short period of time is due to his high-impact approach. Blair's clients span 20 countries on 5 continents and range from Fortune 100 companies to small business owners, entrepreneurs, sales teams, and just regular folks. Blair's programs and his teams of world-class coaches and trainers touch hundreds of thousands of people globally each year. He applies the same tried-and-true principles that work for big corporations and successful entrepreneurs to the business of everyday living, helping individuals hungry for greater success. As one of Robert Kiyosaki's original Rich Dad Advisors, Blair imparts two of the most critical skills and elements for success in business and in life: being able to sell your idea, dream, or concept, and building a great team to deliver it. His unique slant, however, is that the road to success is paved through a powerful combination of both business development and personal development, and knowing how to overcome the limitations and obstacles that arise both personally and within groups. Blair is the author of three best-selling books: Sales Dogs, You Don't Have to Be an Attack Dog to Explode Your Income, and The Team Code of Honor, are Rich Dad Advisor series books. His latest book, Little Voice Mastery, How to Win the War Between Your Ears in 30 Seconds or Less and Have an Extraordinary Life, has led to the creation of several personal development programs that Blair facilitates in cities around the world. With the creation of Sales Dogs, a methodology that offers life-changing sales and communication success, he and his global team of trainers and coaches have helped thousands increase their income worldwide. This unique process identifies and magnifies the natural strengths of an individual or team and converts them into positive results, personal satisfaction, and income. Blair is considered the teacher of teachers in the arena of personal development training and business education. Using his unique brand of high-impact teaching, he has taught thousands of individuals and leaders how to be world-class trainers, presenters, and spokespeople for their brands and messages. For the past 27 years, Blair has conducted thousands of public and private seminars with audiences ranging in size from 3 to 300 to over 10,000. His clients typically experience sales and income growth of 34% to 260% in a matter of a few short months. His work spans across 20 countries and 5 continents. Overseas, he works extensively in Singapore, Hong Kong, Southeast Asia, Australia, South Africa, and around the Pacific Rim. For books by Blair Singer, please see companion file number 13. An excerpt from Sales Dogs, You Don't Have to Be an Attack Dog to Explode Your Income, by Blair Singer.
Chapter 10, Dogged Belief, The Four Mindsets of Champion Sales Dogs. Humans seem to think that they have a complex brain. We have cortexes, limbic systems, reptilian brains, and all sorts of other stuff. A big brain is handy for doing your taxes, remembering your anniversary, or reading this book. But in sales, sometimes too much gray matter can get in the way. Dogs, on the other hand, are very simple creatures with rather small brains. They usually react positively to whatever goes on around them because they don't overanalyze, over-theorize, or over-criticize themselves. They live for the moment. They respond directly to simplicities of pain, pleasure, love, and respect. The golden retriever chasing after a frisbee is entirely focused on success. He probably doesn't worry about all the times he's dropped the disc in the past. He probably doesn't lie awake at night panicking about whether he's going to be able to catch the frisbee tomorrow. He just knows he wants to catch it now and nothing else matters. If that were a human, by the time he got to the park, he'd be stressed to the max, worrying about what others would say if he dropped it. He'd wonder who he would be letting down if he dropped it, and would already be thinking of excuses. The human brain has an amazing gift for linking totally unrelated events in order to come up with weird and wonderful belief systems, superstitions, and rituals. We sometimes come to complex conclusions whenever something out of the ordinary occurs, either good or bad. For example, you make a sales call and it goes particularly badly, and you make a total mess of the presentation and the prospect is really rude. Because our brain is ultimately a pleasure-seeking, pain-avoiding mechanism, it will search the environment for something unique that it can attribute these events to. The conclusion could be as ridiculous as, I washed my hair with new shampoo today. And if you have another painful experience of any kind, and you use that same shampoo in the morning, you suddenly have a belief system that links pain to that shampoo, you will probably suddenly go off that shampoo. This is a